Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 56. The Steelers are preparing to play the San Francisco 49ers in San Francisco on Monday night. Dave, obviously the big question marks, as we discussed on Monday, were the health of Ben Roethlisberger and Marquise Pouncey and what was going to happen with James Harrison. We've got a lot more information now.
Well, yeah, we most certainly do. Grade one, along with Marquise, grade one high ankle sprain. Sounds like they're a little bit they're not as worried about it, Marquise, as they are Ben. People are saying, the teammates and all, saying they would really be surprised if Ben doesn't play. That being said, Scott Brown already tweets before practice on Wednesday today that Ben is still limping pretty badly, and Charlie Batch, who's next in line, says he might not know until Monday who's the starting quarterback against the 49ers. A little cat and mouse there. I wouldn't expect Ben to work any at all this week, really, until Friday, Thursday. I don't even think he works tomorrow. I think they let him go until Friday. Mike Tomlin said yesterday in his press conference, he was asked, will Ben have to practice basically during the week for him to play? And Tomlin pretty much said yes, in some form or fashion that Ben would have to work. So, what that work entails, we don't know. But you got to remember, I believe Saturday is going to be a travel day if they do not leave Friday after practice. They'll have some sort of a walkthrough, I'm sure, at the team hotel. But I would say Friday is going to be the key day here, and we'll just have to keep watching reports going forward as far as Pouncey and he goes. As far as other injuries heading into this game, Tomlin said linebacker. Well, first let's start with Troy Polamalu. He's got that, what I'm being told is like a grade one hamstring pull. So we'll see. I wouldn't expect him to work today. If he does, it'll be limited. Ziggy Hood with a groin. Lamar Woodley, of course, with the hamstring. Who else we got here? Emmanuel Sanders with knee/foot. Chris Carter with the hamstring. Now, Emmanuel Sanders was on 93.7 yesterday morning. He really made it sound like he needed to get back to 100% before he'd play again. He kind of termed himself 80% in that interview. So right now I would kind of think that Sanders is kind of doubtful to play. Arnaz Battle, we did not get an update on him, not that he matters much as a wide receiver, more in special teams. Chris Carter with that hamstring, who knows what's going to happen there. He's not a big-time player. If anything, he would help out on special teams. Ziggy Hood with that groin, Tomlin seemed to be pretty positive about him. And Lamar Woodley, who knows, with the James Harrison suspension being handed out yesterday, Tomlin made it a point to say how big it would be if they got Woodley back into the lineup, because that would allow them to move Jason Worlds over to the right outside linebacker side instead of having to move Timmons back out there. So a lot of question marks that we really don't have the answers about right now, David, and we're not going to until probably Friday at that. And even then, it's going to be a murky, muddy water still in my eyes.
And let me Dave, we talked about Tomlin saying that Roethlisberger would have to practice to play on Monday. And we're going to have in the second half of this show, Matt Barrows from the Sacramento Bee, a beat reporter covering the 49ers. And he's just tweeting right now that Tomlin indicates that Roethlisberger won't have to practice this week to play on Monday. That's not a misspelling, so I wonder where he's getting that information. That kind of conflicts with a lot of the stuff we heard yesterday.
Yeah, it does, unless the conference call, I would imagine, I think the conference call would be today, unless he got something out of the conference call with Tomlin today. So we'll have to make sure that we ask Matt about that a little bit later in the show.
Yep, we'll do that. And then news just came down yesterday about James Harrison, or this morning, I guess, James Harrison being suspended for a game. We've talked about this pretty extensively. I'm sure neither of us are surprised by the result, and we definitely thought it could go either way. We're talking right now at about 1 o'clock, and the appeal is going to take place by phone. with New York this afternoon at 2 o'clock Eastern time. I don't expect much to come of that, but it is interesting to note, as Peter King has been writing about this rather extensively, that that the NFL clearly took into account his history being a second, third-time offender, listed his 5 hits on quarterbacks over the last 3 years, and some roughing, some personal foul penalties that he's also incurred, and $120,000 or so in fines that he's incurred. So all of that played a part in this. And but at the same time, Peter King said on such a questionable hit, he thought it was probably wouldn't have voted to suspend.
Well, you know, Mike Tomlin's comments yesterday in that press conference were pretty telling. He kept terming it an illegal hit, which if you look at the rules, you know, I guess it was. You know, if you look at the rules ever up, I believe it's on the NFL media site, the blog that they have, it was an illegal hit. Now, it was an unfortunate circumstance. So let's kind of talk about this for a moment. You know, McCoy did have the ball tucked. He was running with the football before he pulled up and passed. He, you know, he had success kind of running out of the pocket earlier in the game. That being said, you know, when you watch the replay 1,000 times, you can't hit the quarterback in the head. And, you know, I think the NFL, what they need to do is just go ahead and get that out of the way altogether. No hitting the quarterback in the head, whether he's inside the pocket or outside the pocket. It was an unfortunate situation for James. Call it wrong place, wrong time, wrong situation. It really is a kind of a, you know, a grayish area. But, you know, Tomlin didn't defend it like he did the Ryan Clark hit back against the Ravens a few weeks ago, and Ken Laird and I went at that a little bit this morning on Twitter. Ryan Clark obviously lowered his shoulder on that play. Ed Dixon obviously lowered his head into that hit on that play. That being said, you know, Ryan Clark was still flagged. Was he flagged on that play?
He was flagged on that
yeah,
play.
Yeah, he was flagged on that play. And for the pretty much the defenseless receiver, you know, type situation there. And he was, of course, fined, as we all know. You know, there are some, you know, murky waters as far as this go. But I think what plays into the fact here is James Harrison's previous history of hitting quarterbacks and his hit on a quarterback this time that was indeed flagged. So, you know, it's not a surprise. As we said the other day, I kind of thought if he was suspended, it would be for a game, not 2 games. It's hard to see this appeal going the way of Harrison here, but you know, it's just part of the process. And I don't know. I mean, I hate to say that I defend the league's actions on this because I love hitting in football. I love James Harrison. I think he's a hell of a football player. I think intimidation is a big part of the game, as it was back with our Steelers in the 70s and all as well, too, and even throughout time with our linebackers and all. I hate to see that taken out of the game, but I can kind of see where the league's coming from. As far as the suspension here, and I know that'll ruffle a lot of probably feathers of listeners to our show.
Yep, no question. But you know, I think rationally looking at it, it's just you don't have to like it. It's just not surprising they come down. They came down this way, and as you said, I don't see the appeal. I don't see anything changing in the appeal. But we'll see what happens. We'll get to that on Friday.
Well, let me ask you: Do you think the league was right in suspending him? Now that we've had time to chew on it all,
I don't have a problem with the decision.
Okay.
If they hadn't suspended him, I wouldn't have had a problem with that decision either. I do think it's a very fine line. If they're going to set precedent here, and I, you know, obviously going forward, it's really important that they are consistent with this now, that other players are fined and treated the same way. Repeat offenders are suspended. But, yeah, I think, you know, you saw what Sue did a couple times, and then he has a blatant act like he did. He got a suspension. I think everybody saw that coming. I think the problem here with Harrison is maybe if you want to look for silver linings in the clouds, maybe, and clearly the timing is unfortunate with the 49er game coming up, The only thing we were thinking is an appeal, if it didn't happen quickly, they would postpone the suspension for a week while they sorted through the appeal, but it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. But the silver lining may be that James Harrison gets a one-game suspension here rather than a three-game suspension sometime next year when he does this again, if they hadn't suspended him this time. I just think the Steelers have to kind of take the approach the Penguins took with Matt Cook and say, look, James, we're in your corner, but maybe not quite as much as they clearly, as you pointed out, with Ryan Clark. But you've got to change the way you play, or this is going to be a non-tenable situation for everybody. So I don't know. I don't know if Mike Tomlin has a sit down or Dick LeBeau has a sit down with James Harrison and goes through this stuff. And clearly, the coaches have taught the defensive players or talked to the defensive players about how they're supposed to approach this. So you know, the silver lining maybe this finally gets the message through. Only time will tell.
What do you think James Harrison's attitude over the past, you know, year and a half, 2 years, kind of his flip attitude to all of this, you know, played a role in it, especially his comments maybe in Men's Journal and all like that, and the comments way back into the, you know, the Super Bowl press conference and all like that. Do you think that played a role in any of this?
I don't. I don't think in the decision-making process. I know a lot of people dislike Roger Goodell and think he's did a bad job in the labor agreement and did a bad job in how he's meted out punishment, but I don't think he's vindictive, so no.
Well, let me just say, and I'll reiterate what I said heading into this, I think the NFL, if the quarterback's off limits, he's off limits. So why not, let's just go ahead and change the rules that if it's the quarterback out there, you just can't hit him in the head, period, and then let's be done with that. I know it's hard for a player to have to look for a number first to see if it's a quarterback running around, especially now when you got a guy like Tim Tebow that runs a lot. You know, there are some gray areas in the rules that I think need to be cleaned up, and maybe they'll do this. Maybe Tomlin will be part of the competition committee. Now they have an opening, I believe, because I think it was Jack Del Rio who was on the competition committee. Of course, he's now no longer an NFL head coach. Maybe Tomlin gets on that, and maybe they clean up these rules a little bit more.
Yeah, and you know, just as we talk about I agree with you. The quarterback, the problem always is if the quarterback's out there in broken field and puts his head down and then gets hit in the head, what happens there? And so how do you do it? Because then you're almost obligated to go at his legs. And, you know, it's a difficult thing that all these sports are trying to work through. Clearly, the NHL has a massive problem with something like 22 players currently sidelined, including the two top leading scorers and Sidney Crosby and Chris Pronger. I mean, it's a disaster. Just take hits to the head out of the NHL and, you know, life gets a little simpler, at least in terms of figuring out, you know, how the rules are applied. So it's crazy stuff, and certainly science and concussions and the things that are going on, people have a very different views than they had 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw my post last night on taking a shot at the NFL and their silly little double standards, but, you know, if you're going to preach about player safety and all, and I know this, the league has a hard time monitoring this, but they should put somebody in charge of it. On their NFL photo store, you can buy a nice framed picture, David, for Christmas for yourself of Colt McCoy sitting on the ground right after he rode the Debo ride of concussed with the two doctors over him. So, you know, put that on your Christmas list. Browns fans out there can buy a nice framed photo on the NFL photo store of Ben Roethlisberger the moment it looks like his ankle's about to get snapped off too. So, you know, they had this thing last year with the week that all those hits occurred with Harrison on Massaquoi and the hit on Deshaun Jackson and all. They were selling the photos of those hits in the store, and they Greg Aiello, the PR guy, vowed had those taken down and said there'll never be photos of illegal hits again. But yet you're selling photos glorifying injuries. So, you know, imagine that.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. And I'll tell you, just the other thing that came out of that whole play is the Browns are obviously under a lot of scrutiny for putting McCoy back in the game. Holmgren said today that McCoy was not tested for concussion on the sideline after that play. Part of the reason he went back in the game, well, you know, that's just negligent. I mean, how does the guy get popped in the head, a 15-yard penalty, and he lies on the ground for a minute and a half, and the doctors don't test him on the sideline? That's just craziness.
Yeah, late in the game, do you think they're going to spend the time to put him through that concussion test?
Right, Dan, that's your answer, right?
Yeah, exactly. So maybe the NFL needs to do something against, take some action against the Browns as well if they're serious about this thing.
Right, and we'll see what happens, but clearly impartial neurologist on the sideline is going to be the next step in this process, and it's all unfortunate stuff, and it keeps us from talking about football. So let's talk a little bit about football. And what's going on. So the Steelers come into this game 10-3. We've gone through the playoff scenarios. The big news, the big game for Steeler fans to be watching, the big game for the NFL to be watching, NFL fans will obviously be the Patriots at the Broncos. But for Steeler fans, it's going to be the Sunday night game with the Ravens in San Diego. San Diego played much better football on Sunday against Buffalo, blew them out. The Ravens have won four straight games with Ray Lewis on the sidelines. Looks like he's coming back. And then the Steelers will go Monday night. So both teams out on the West Coast, pretty much this weekend is probably going to determine where the number one playoff seed comes from and how the wild card shakes out for the Steelers. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Both those games are going to be great games to watch, I have a feeling. I've already started breaking down a little bit of tape on the 49ers from their game against the Cardinals. And, the 49ers just couldn't do anything in the red zone. The Cardinals had a couple of big plays to Doucette and Fitzgerald, and both teams were able to get enormous pressure on each other's quarterbacks. So, the thing about Tomlin hit on yesterday with the 49ers defense is I believe it was their plus 31, or they have 31 takeaways so far this year. So, and a couple of those that they got in the game against the Cardinals on Sunday were tip balls. So that's one thing I want to ask Matt about as well, too. Are most of these interceptions that they're getting, are they the tip ball type, or are they just bad quarterbacking or what? So, another thing about the 49ers defense is they have failed. They have yet to allow a rushing touchdown on defense thus far this season, and their offense has only turned the ball over 10 times, 5 via interception, 5 via fumble. So, Alex Smith, he might not be a great quarterback, but he's making a lot better decisions this year, along with a little bit of luck going their way. And their defense is playing well above the line, in my opinion. Now, on the Chargers game, this is a game I really think that the Ravens can lose if they're not careful. The Ravens defense will decide whether or not that they win this game, in my opinion.
Yeah, Dave, I want to go back to our conversation about San Francisco, and we'll do more of this, but a guy named Vince Verhey of Football Outsiders wrote an article about San Francisco and their fatal flaw and talks about the game with the Cards, the 21-19 loss, where it looked like the defense maybe was responsible because they gave up two big scores of 40-plus yards, but he talks about how really it was the offense was terrible, and more particularly their red zone offense inside the 20. They ranked toward the bottom of the league, and this is one of the things where we've seen the Steeler defense over the years, as many years as they've given up games at times, we have seen them consistently keep teams out of the end zone, and that'll be one of the keys to this game when we get into this further is, is San Francisco able to get the ball in the end zone? Are they going to have to settle for field goals when they are able to move the ball? And then on the Steelers side of things, of course, we know that sevens are how much more important they are than threes, and that rushing defense, as you said, hasn't let up a rushing touchdown all season long. So just two early things to think about and be focused on when the game comes around Monday night.
Yeah, 49ers, 35.56% red zone percentage, ranked 32nd in the league.
Not so good, huh?
Not so good. The Steelers defense, hold on just a minute here. The Steelers defense red zone percentage, 57.69, ranked 22nd in the league. So, of course, they don't let that, I think that goes down to maybe some attempts down in the red zone, but usually it seems like when teams do get down in the red zone, they do come away with seven. So, not a number you'd like to see, but it all comes down to scoring. I'm sorry, it's 57.69% percentage in the red zone, and they're ranked 22nd in the league, the Steelers defense, that is.
Dave, if we're going to just before we get to this interview with Mark Barrow of the Sacramento Bee, if we're going to kind of look at week 13 and say just kind of from a bigger picture perspective, clearly virtually every Steeler fan has to be relatively pleased with their record right now. But you don't want to lose two games to the Ravens. But are the Steelers on track and doing the things that you expected this year? We expected to see a little more passing. We've seen that. The defense is maybe the corners have been a little more effective than we thought. But is the season unfolding the way you thought it would in terms of player performance?
I think they are. I think they are getting better as the season progresses. Now, of course, I like to track this adjusted net yards per passing attempt differential stat, and they've been climbing the last few weeks in that. Differential-wise, they still sit third overall in the league, and it's a pretty important stat, and as well as the toxic stat, too. You know, they got off to the rough start tox-wise with big plays and turnovers. The season didn't start off good against the Ravens, but they have more than recovered than that. So I think they are doing all the things that they need to do on both offense and defense. I think the passing game is not quite yet where it should be. It seems as teams have kind of made more of the adjustments to take away Mike Wallace and the deep ball. They're not doing as good of a job, even though Antonio Brown has picked up a lot of that slack. You're still got to have people like Heath Miller, Emmanuel Sanders, which we haven't seen much of, and either Hines Ward or Jericho Cotchery, kind of pick up a little bit of that slack and make these teams pay. It'll be interesting if Roethlisberger does play this game banged up. He's not going to be 100%, let's face it, going into this game. I would expect it to see something along the lines, which I said this last week or 2 weeks ago against the Chiefs defense, sort of a short, quick passing game, because the 49ers really can get off after the quarterback on defense. I think they're going to provide with Aldon Smith, and whether or not Patrick Willis plays or not, I really don't think it's going to make a difference, because I think the other linebacker they have there, who's that over there? Name's escaping me all of a sudden here. Is playing real well, and his absence leads the team in tackles and is high in the league in tackles as well too. I don't think they can let Tomlin get hit. And let's face it, the Steelers' passing game is predicated on spreading the field out and extending the play, and I don't think this is something that you'll be able to do with Roethlisberger. So I would expect a lot of quick passing attempts. They're going to have to try to find a way to run the football of some sorts, but they are doing the things that they need to do heading into this week against the 49ers.
And if you were going to pick out one thing, Dave, that's been the most surprising, I mean, if we hadn't seen training camp, I think the easy answer is obviously Antonio Brown, but he was so dynamic in training camp that he gave us a taste of what might be there. So let's take him out of that question. And whose performance so far this year has been most surprising for you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dave. And I would say probably Brett Kiesel and Keenan Lewis. I think Brett Kiesel has played fantastic, especially after coming back from that early season calf hamstring type injury. I think Keenan Lewis, although he only plays in nickel situations, teams really aren't not throwing throwing at him. They're still choosing to throw at Ike Taylor and William Gay when he's lined up in the nickel type situation. So those are two names there on defense that probably don't get talked about enough. That I think I wouldn't call Brett Kiesel an overly surprised. I just think he's playing really at a Pro Bowl type level, and I think Keenan's just doing the job when he's in the game.
That's funny, Dave, because I would go along those. And similarly, say Ike Taylor may not be a surprise, but playing at a level that we haven't seen before. I think this has been his best season, even though, maybe just one bad game all year long. And then I would throw William Gay in there as your Keenan Lewis. Gay continues to elevate his game. We saw it at times last year, particularly on when he was blitzing out of the nickel package, coming off the edge when he was covering the slot guys. Better in coverage this year. He's still effective blitzing, but he's doing a little less of that in the second half of the season, but much better in coverage than we saw last year or any year for that matter. And 2 years ago, I didn't think he should make the team. Last year, I was very questionable. This year, very questionable coming in even. And to his credit, he's playing better football.
Yeah, I agree. And that kind of segues into an email we got from a longtime listener, Mark Irish, who, you know, above other things that he wanted us to get to, which we'll be getting into in later podcasts like draft needs and stuff, he asked our thoughts on William Gay, Chris Kimuatu, and Mike Tomlin. William Gay, you know, I've always been in the William Gay kind of corner. I think you see in the effects of Carnell Lake probably working with him. I never thought Gay was as awful as people made him out to be. I think he has the skills. He's not a shutdown corner by any stretch of the imagination. He's not going to the Pro Bowl. Hey, look, you know, cornerback's one of the toughest positions, highly criticized in the league because, you know, if they give up a score, everybody wants to, or a big player, everybody wants to point their finger. Chris Kimuatu, yeah, this guy is going downhill quickly. It started last year. We're seeing it in full-blown mode right now. It was interesting to hear Mike Tomlin's comments yesterday. When asked about the penalties of Kimuatu, what's going on with him, and Kimuatu said he's playing, Tomlin said Kimuatu's playing illegally. So if he doesn't square that away technique-wise, you know, he's not going to get a chance to play. It'll be interesting to see if Pouncey's unable to go this week, if Trey Essex or Kimo will start at left guard because of Kimo or Essex will start at left guard if Ligurski has to switch over to center. Mike Tomlin, we've talked about him a lot this year and some of the decisions he's made, kind of getting caught up in games, some time management issues. But look, nobody handles a team better than this guy in the locker room. You know, I can't really say where any of these time management things have cost the Steelers any of these games, in my opinion. Until that happens, it's, you know, I kind of think we can kind of turn a blind eye to him a little bit. But, yeah, we've seen Tomlin kind of mess up there, but I'm not ready to throw him out or anything like that.
Yeah, Dave, it's amazing. I got an email the other day during the, I guess it was the when the Steelers didn't go for it near the goal line. What was that, against Kansas City when they were up? Let me start over. What game was that?
Well, they went four in a row against Cleveland the other night.
Yeah, Cleveland game, right? Okay. Yeah, Dave, it's amazing. I just got an email on when they played Cleveland on Thursday night during the game with this guy saying, how can you support that idiot Tomlin when the Steelers went for it four times from the 1 yard line and didn't score? It's amazing how fair weather fans can be at times, not just Steeler fans in general. Tomlin's done an extraordinarily good job, and you and I have critiqued his clock management and occasionally his in-game tactics. But I think sometimes fans forget that is a component and obviously a very important component of coaching. But what goes on in terms of player personnel, in terms of putting the right guys on the field, in terms of having control of the locker room, are huge components behind the scenes, and I have little doubt that Tomlin is as good as virtually any coach in the NFL at those aspects of his job.
I agree, and we appreciate Mark for sending on in that email. And for anybody else, you can contact us, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And we try to get back to you, get your question answered and all. And, Mark, we promise to get to your other items listed in that email and in some future podcast.
All right, Dave, well, let's wrap up segment one. We'll be right back with Mark Barrow, the Sacramento Bee, to do our first look at the San Francisco 49ers, the Steelers' opponent, on Monday Night Football. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. We're pleased to have as our guest Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. Matt's been covering the 49ers for the Bee since 2003. You can follow Matt on Twitter at Matt Barrows, B-A-R-R-O-W-S. Get all your latest updates on the 49ers as they prepare for the Steelers on Monday night. Matt, appreciate you taking the time to join us on the Terrible Podcast.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Matt, one of the things we saw you just tweeted before we get into the San Francisco injury report and what's going on with the Niners, yesterday Mike Tomlin seemed to suggest to the Pittsburgh media that Roethlisberger would need to practice this week to play on Monday. I saw you send out a tweet just a little while ago that said the opposite. Did you hear something different today in a phone call?
Yeah, we sure did, and we followed up a couple of times just to make sure we were hearing it right. Initially, Tomlin said that, there might need to be some situational football things that Roethlisberger would need to do in practice at the end of the week in order for him to play on Monday. By the end of the conversation, though, he was saying that Roethlisberger's experience, the position he plays, means that, no, he doesn't have to practice this week in order to play. To me, that this is all sort of gamesmanship, cat and mouse stuff, so that the 49ers have to prepare for both Ben and Charlie Batch this week, giving them obviously more to do during their work week. But my sense is that he's going to keep Tomlin is going to keep this under wraps as long as he can, and try to make it a game time decision on Monday night, so that the 49ers are indeed the 49ers and everyone else are guessing right up until game time.
Right, and can you bring us up to date on the injury situation with the 49ers?
Well, the big one is Patrick Willis. He's a guy in his first four seasons only missed one game. He suffered a pretty bad, I'd say a medium bad hamstring strain 2 weeks ago against the Rams. He missed this last game against the Cardinals, and he's also going to be questionable for the Monday game. I'm sure Jim Harbaugh, no stranger to gamesmanship himself, is going to be doing the same thing with Willis as the Steelers are with Roethlisberger, trying to keep the Steelers guessing about that move as long as they can. And frankly, I don't have any real sense about whether Willis is going to play or not. Obviously, this is a very big game for the 49ers. They want to stay ahead of the Saints as far as getting that first-round bye in the playoffs. But by the same token, they don't want to risk their best player on defense, the best player on the team, re-aggravating an injury that can be a pesky one if you rush back too soon. So they sort of got a fine line thing going on with Patrick Willis.
Dave, why don't you take it from there?
The San Francisco offense, I think you noted this on a recent article of yourself on the Sacramento Bee website. In the red zone, they certainly are struggling. 35.56% in the red zone, ranked 32nd in the league currently. We saw this on full display. I just watched the replay of the 49ers-Cardinals game from this past week where the 49ers struggled in the red zone. This has been a problem for them all season, correct? And what's going on that's causing the problem?
Well, it's very hard to say. One of the issues is that Frank Gore, their workhorse running back, isn't at full strength right now, and they've been taking it easy on him as far as his carries. He's somebody I'm sure they would like to lean on in the red zone, but haven't been able to these past few games. To me, the biggest reason for the red zone struggles is the quarterback, Alex Smith, who, to his credit, has been very careful with the ball, thrown very few interceptions this year. And, but when you get into that red zone situation, the windows are tighter, the coverage is tighter. You need to take more risks than Smith does. And he's been more apt to throw the ball out of bounds, to put it in a place where the defense can't get the ball, but also the offense can't get it either. Some outside throws to receiver Braylon Edwards that have gone incomplete, and I think that they've been willing to settle for 3 points more than they should have. The defense has been so good that settling for 3 points usually isn't such a bad thing. They're still able to win handily against their opponents, but against the Cardinals, that came back to bite them because the defense wasn't able to, pitch the shutout like it did the week prior against the Rams.
Coming into the season, there are a lot of question marks about Alex Smith. All around the league, I'm sure not only in 49ers, fan nation as well, too. But is the coaching of Jim Harbaugh, being he's a former quarterback, helped him make the smarter decision? Because, as you said, he only has 5 interceptions, and I believe the 49ers have only turned the ball over 10 times in total this year. So, are they just, as you said, more willing to let their defense kind of keep them in games and not have Alex Smith press and put the ball down the field and instead just kind of throw the ball away?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And to address your first point, I think Alex Smith has had to this point two defensive coaches in Mike Nolan and then Mike Singletary. This year he's got not only an offensive coach but an offensive coach who used to be a quarterback in the NFL. And I think Jim Harbaugh has done an excellent job of recognizing who Alex Smith is, knowing the position so well that he knows what to do with Smith and what not to do with Smith. And I think that second point is perhaps the biggest one. I mean, he's not putting Smith in situations where Smith will fail. And I'm not sure Jim Harbaugh's predecessors did a very good job with that. Alex Smith is not a top five quarterback. He might not even be a top 10 quarterback, but he can be a good quarterback on a team that relies heavily on its defense, that's got a good special teams, that's got a great kicker like David Akers. David Akers is about to set a record for field goals made in the season, which has a lot to do with the 49ers' red zone woes, but he's also been really good from long distances as well. So it's a team that doesn't need its quarterback to throw for 350 yards and four touchdowns a game. And Smith certainly hasn't done that, but he's been a nice complement to everything else that's going on with the 49ers this year.
One thing we noticed, I noticed in that game last week against the Cardinals, was the enormous amount of pressure the Cardinals were able to get on Alex Smith. Now, is that normal? And B, I don't think you mentioned Joe Staley in your injury rundown. How is his health coming out of that game with a concussion? Is he going to be able to go? And has allowed pressure been, a problem for the 49ers this season?
It has been. Like I said earlier about Frank Gore, they've been taking it easier on Gore in recent games. He's not been the workhorse he was during the first half of the season, and so their run-pass ratio has flipped. Early on, they were a running team, very much so, called a lot more running plays than they did passing plays. Since week 10, that's been turned on its head. They've become more of a passing team, which, of course, has put more pressure on the offensive line to protect Alex Smith, and frankly, they haven't done a very good job of that. To me, the big issues are on the inside of the line, getting coordination with the two guards in the center. Teams have been very good at running stunts, running zone blitzes, bringing two inside linebackers up the middle at the same time. The 49ers, they just haven't been on the same page as far as picking those up. Staley left the game early on Sunday with a concussion. He hasn't been cleared for practice yet, although the 49ers aren't starting to practice for this game until tomorrow. So we'll find out tomorrow what his health status is. He is expected to play in that game, though.
Matt, we're on with Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. Matt, flipping to the other side of the ball and looking at the defense, the two guys, I don't know that certainly Patrick Willis is a guy that everybody is aware of, and he's made his Pro Bowl teams and gets a lot of recognition. Justin Smith is a guy who doesn't and flies under the radar, and many people think he is one of the better defensive linemen in the game. And the other guy is Navarro Bowman, who has really come on as an inside linebacker playing next to Patrick Willis. Tell us a little bit about those two guys.
Well, it all starts for the 49ers with the defensive line. They've got just a crazy streak going on. They haven't allowed a rushing touchdown all year. And if this holds up, they'll become the first team ever in the history of professional football not to allow a rushing touchdown. And Justin Smith is the best member of that group. He had a play earlier this year against the Eagles where the 49ers had a lead late in the game. The Eagles were driving down, and it looked as if they were going to score a last-second touchdown or field goal to win the game. And Smith chased down from behind Jeremy Maclin and poked the ball free to preserve that win. And it's really become the iconic moment for the 49ers this season. And it just shows you the type of player he is. He's all hustle. He's a tough guy to deal with at the beginning of games, and he's even tougher at the end when everyone else has sort of succumbed to fatigue. He's still going 100 miles an hour, and he's really become the heart and soul of that defense. And, you know, he's the guy. He, along with nose tackle Isaac Sopawaga in the left defensive end, Ray McDonald, do a great job of clearing lanes for Patrick Willis and for Navarro Bowman, who has been a real pleasant surprise this year. He's basically identical to Willis in size and speed, and so you've got essentially two Patrick Willises now in the inside of that defense, and they're both very fast guys, very aggressive, and that combination of two excellent inside linebackers with a very stout defensive line has, been disastrous for opposing running games. No opposing rusher has gone over 100 yards against the 49ers since Ryan Grant with the Packers did it in November 2009. So that's another pretty impressive streak they've got going on, and it's that combination of talent at linebacker and some really blue-collar play along the defensive line that has attained that.
And tell us a little bit more about this defense, because as everybody has pointed out, the team has been more or less carried is probably too strong a word, but the defensive unit has been the strength of the team. Ahmad Brooks is a guy out of UVA in his sixth year that was a very recognized, distinguished college player. And with the linebackers in San Francisco, he's another guy who doesn't get a lot of attention. How has he done this year? And then tell us about the secondary, because you look at the names, Terrell Brown, Deshaun Goldson, these are not household names. These aren't guys that people know. In Pittsburgh, they know Shante Spencer because he's a, if I recall correctly, he's a Pitt grad. But tell us about some of the other guys back there.
Well, Spencer was a second-round pick in 2002 and had been a starter up until this year, but he's gotten very little play this year. That's been one of the sort of sub-storylines out here. It's been the other guys who have really stepped up. Terrell Brown, he's usually the guy on the opposition's deep threat. He's a fast cornerback, not too physical. But Carlos Rogers really has been the big addition to this team. He was a former first-round pick by the Redskins, didn't really work out in D.C., and the big rap on him in D.C. was that he would be in position to have these game-changing interceptions and would just drop them, and everybody questioned his hands. Well, he comes to San Francisco, and all of a sudden he's got five picks to lead the team, including one he returned for a touchdown earlier this year. So he's added sort of a veteran savvy to the unit. It's mostly a young unit that's been really needed, and he's been the key addition to the secondary. You asked about Brooks. Really, the 49ers took a big leap of faith with him this year. He'd only been a bit player for them the previous two seasons, and Vic Fangio made him a starter, and not just a starter, but they a lot of these guys, including Justin Smith and Ray McDonald, they don't substitute them. I mean, these guys play every snap of the game, and that was, like I said, a big leap for a guy like Brooks, who A, hadn't played a whole lot for this team, and B, had struggled with weight issues, sort of motivation issues. And he's really come through for this team. You talked about what a great high school player he was. Defensive Player of the Year, USA's Today's Defensive Player of the Year, went to UVA, got into trouble there, and has really started to come into his own this year. He's somebody that the 49ers really like and really want to re-sign. Big guy with a smaller man's speed. And they really rely on him to pressure the quarterback. This is not a team that blitzes very often at all. They rely on four pass rushers to put pressure on opposing quarterbacks, and Ahmad Brooks is primary among that group.
Mike Tomlin hit on the 31 takeaways by the 49ers in his press conference on Tuesday. Quite an amazing amount. I believe they had something like 22 last year as a team. They have 18 interceptions this year. I saw a couple of them in that Cardinals game were on tip balls, we'll call it bad quarterbacking, you know, if you will. Nonetheless, they were there to make the interception. Have they just been in the right place at the right time as far as takeaways this year, or have you seen anything that has led to them being maybe a little bit more aggressive on defense to force these turnovers?
Well, I just talked about how they don't like to blitz. They like to bring just four rushers all the time, and that enables them to drop a full unit into pass coverage. And the idea is that quarterbacks are throwing into traffic, and there are tip balls and all that, and most of the time that has worked to the 49ers' advantage. Skelton threw two interceptions on Sunday. A.J. Feely, the Rams quarterback, threw interceptions the week prior. The flip side of that, however, is that a lot of times those four pass rushers aren't enough to get to the quarterback, and opposing QBs have plenty of time. Skelton had time in the game Sunday and almost threw for 300 yards. Tony Romo, Michael Vick, Eli Manning, they've all had very big games against the 49ers, and that's sort of the fear out here in facing the Steelers, and I think everybody's assuming that Roethlisberger is going to play, is that he's going to have time to throw, and he's going to be able to hit some of these talented wideouts that the Steelers have deep. So that's sort of the flip side, the other side of the coin for the strategy that the 49ers have employed this year.
I think the 49ers have done a good job of getting pressure, it seems like, on the quarterback, though, and I worry if Roethlisberger does indeed play, I would think that a more short, quick passing game might be more in line for the Steelers underneath. But you think that the Steelers might be able to kind of hold off the pass rush and attack them deep then?
Yeah, absolutely. Teams have had success with the big passing play against the 49ers. Now, I will say that you guys probably all watched the Thanksgiving night game against the Ravens. They did, in fact, employ what you were talking about, a sort of get-the-ball-out-very-quickly type of game plan, using Anquan Boldin quite a bit on short slants and whatnot. That was effective on at least one drive, the Ravens' touchdown drive against them, and that certainly may be something that the Steelers do as well. They certainly have the type of receivers that can do that.
And if we talk about the explosive guys on the Niners, clearly Ted Ginn in the return game, and then Crabtree, Vernon Davis, and Braylon Edwards are three quality guys. How have they performed this year?
Well, I'll start from bottom to top. Braylon Edwards and Alex Smith have simply not been on the same page recently. Edwards missed about a month with a knee injury earlier this year. He got it in week two against Dallas. And since then, he just hasn't been part of the game plan. He's been bothered by the knee. That slowed him down a little bit. He came in early August. There just wasn't a lot of chemistry between him and Alex Smith, and those two guys have really struggled to get on the same page. We talked about red zone issues earlier with his team. Edwards at 6'3", 218 or so pounds, he should be the team's best red zone threat, but he doesn't have a touchdown this year. There have been a number of attempts. They just are not clicking those two, and that's something that's concerning for them, certainly concerning to Edwards, who's going to be a free agent this year and is trying to kind of show off his wares to the rest of the league. But it's something that they need to get on top of if they want to, keep pace with teams like the Saints, with teams like the Packers in the playoffs. Vernon Davis, I think he's also been frustrated. He's been the team's big play threat the last two seasons, caught 13 touchdowns 2 years ago, 10 last year, and just hasn't been part of the deep passing game like he had been in previous offenses. But he's still a threat. They like to hit him with underneath stuff so that he can use his speed to run past the defense. But he just hasn't been incorporated as much as he had been in previous years. Crabtree has developed into Alex Smith's top target. He's not a prolific receiver. He's not a downfield threat. He's very good at slant routes. He's very good at digging the ball out of short comeback routes and things like that. He's actually, for a guy who came into the league with a reputation of being a diva, he has become a very good downfield blocker in the running game. He sprung Frank Gore on his 37-yard touchdown against the Cardinals on Sunday. He's not quite at Hines Ward levels, but he's really shown a willingness to do that, and that's sort of been one of the surprises this season.
We're talking with Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. You can follow Matt on Twitter, at Matt Barrows. Matt, before we let you go, the offseason hire of Harbaugh was clearly liked around the league, and I know in the Bay Area with him being a Stanford guy, but nobody saw this coming, this kind of immediate turnaround, successful season. Are you able to kind of point at a couple things or one thing about his management style and how he's brought this team together to point to their success this year?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I'm not trying to take away from Jim Harbaugh and what he's done, is that he inherited a roster that is was a lot more talented than what a typical first-year coach is going to get. And not only that, it was really built for Jim Harbaugh already. I mean, you saw his teams at Stanford. They're big teams, big offensive lines, love to run the ball, love to use the tight end. And that's what he got here in San Francisco. It's a team where they spent their draft capital on the offensive line over the years. They had two very good tight ends in Delanie Walker and Vernon Davis. And they had a running back in Frank Gore. And all of that has really meshed quite well with what Jim Harbaugh wanted to do. And you have to go back and wonder. You'll remember he was being courted by the Dolphins, by the University of Michigan, by the Broncos. And you have to wonder whether he looked at all those teams and said, gee, the 49ers are the team that I could really win with immediately. And that's what's happened. Even last year when the Seahawks ended up winning the division and the 49ers finished behind them and the Rams, I think if you asked anybody in the NFC West in those front offices, they would say that the 49ers were the most talented team of that group. They just didn't have the coaching. And to his credit, Harbaugh has been able to do with that group what Mike Singletary and his crew were not. And he's done an excellent job of taking those pieces, those chess pieces that he had, and using him in the right way. And that starts with the quarterback, Alex Smith.
Dave, anything you want to wrap us up with?
No, why don't we see if we can get a prediction? I know it's a little bit early, but would you rather us wait and point people to the side, or do you have an early prediction for the game for us?
Well, this is off the top of my head, but I think the 49ers are smarting from their loss against the Cardinals. I think they're going to win this. I think it's going to be a typical tight game, and I know both of these teams play those types of games. But, Roethlisberger's injury either means that Charlie Batch is going to start or Roethlisberger is going to be limited somewhat, and I think that's going to be a big factor in this game. I think it's going to be one of those ugly score-type games. I'm going to go 17-16 49ers.
All right, Matt. Appreciate your time. Great insights. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. And then one last time, folks, if follow Matt on Twitter, at Matt Barrows, B-A-R-R-O-W-S. Get all the latest news on the 49ers. And, of course, see his articles and his blog at the Sacramento Bee. Thanks again for your time.
Okay, talk to you guys later.